while you was here, and Baruch Hashem, the yeshiva has a future. Lo Alman Yisrael. Well, they've selected our student, Rabbi Dr. Ari Berman, to committee will recommend him to be the next president, and he's a very good choice. The only thing I'm upset is that he's leaving Israel. A wonderful individual, the family acclimated well here, and he's leaving. All right, we're ready to roll. Everyone is here. That's in order to be president of YU, you have to live in America. One second. Okay. Today is September 18th, 2016. It's a Sunday. And I want to say hello to my wonderful students in front of me and to everyone listening. I know that a lot of people are listening. I saw from last week's Shurim how many emails came in. I want to pass around the sheet, but I want to make one change this year. In addition to your name, put in your email number. That way we'll have a backup if by any chance we can't say Shir, something goes wrong, it snows, everyone can be informed. So, and if you're a new student, the drop of background, if you graduated Yeshiva College, Smicha program, etc., so, and where you grew up, I should know you're here. One interesting correction from last week's Shia, I don't know if it's a correction or not, but you ready? The chairs here.
All broken chairs.
What can I tell you?
The new president.
What can I tell you? The new president will come up with a grant for new chairs. Okay? Pass it around. I mentioned last week that Reb Menashe Klein's tshuva was to Dov Frimmer. And I told you a little bit about Dov Frimmer's father, Norman. So Professor Morty Tarrigan heard the shiur on Monday. I heard it later during the week. And if you recall, I told you he was held hostage in the B'nai B'rith building. And Morty said to me, it wasn't Arab terrorists. It was, we can't mention who it was. It's not politically correct today. Implying it was Afro-Americans. So I want to tell you, I was right and I was wrong. I told Morty, print out the article, and here it is from March 14, 1977. B'nai B'rith leaders have appealed for effective measures to combat the kind of terrorism that paralyzed Washington for 39 hours when 12 members of the Hanafi Muslim sect seized three buildings last Wednesday and held 134 persons hostage. And among the people held hostage was Rabbi Norman Frimmer, National Director of the Hillel Foundation. So if you read the whole article, you'll understand these were not foreign Muslims. Like, we don't know who blew up New York last night. But the chances are they're going to find someone who came into America from one of the Islamic countries. These were Native Americans, and this movement was on by the Afro-Americans to become Muslims and to redeem yourself from all the prejudice that you had in America. So I stand semi-corrected. I'll leave it at that. I also want to mention, this is a doctorate that just appeared in print. It's Menahanod B'Yehuda L'Chatam Sofer. It's by Ma'oz Kahana. Ma'oz Kahana, his father is a professor, he's a professor. He teaches, it's a doctorate done at Hebrew U. He teaches at Tel Aviv U, if I'm not mistaken. It is a brilliant piece of work. And I was very happy because in this doctorate, he touches upon some of the very lectures that I've given over the decades. And I'm not in alien territory. I see that Baruch Hashem, I understand and I comprehend. And when you get someone who's writing a doctorate and he agrees with your thinking, it's very good. He writes a lot in here about Rav Shaul Berlin. Rav Shaul Berlin plays a big role. Rav Tzvi Hizkaya plays a big role. I'll come to that. In the Monday class, I'm going to spend some time with Rav Yitzchak Kutner when I finish the Lubavitcher Rebbe. And I'll come to Rav Tzvi Hizkayas as well. And I see my comprehension of Rav Tzvi Hizkayas is not off base. It's a very interesting doctorate. Avraham, I'm very, very happy to see you. And I look forward to meeting your wife. I understand she speaks English excellently. Fabulous. He got married in Berlin. It was, I think, the biggest Jewish wedding in Berlin since Hitler came to power. Am I right or wrong?
That's what they say, I don't know.
That's what they say. Can
why
I
Germany? Why Germany?
The girl was living in Germany.
Why was she living there?
She was from Russian origins, and they went to Germany, and Baruch Hashem, she was studying at a seminary in Berlin. Chaim, relax yourself.
I'm relaxed.
Calm him down. This is... Rachamim found the girl there.
He should not be calmed down. He has a legitimate feeling.
Yeah, but if the shidduch is proposed and it works out and the girl wants to get married with her parents there and you can spit on Hitler's grave, why not? You understand? I also don't set foot in Germany. Herbie, relax.
I'm relaxed.
Okay, beseda. Now, and just another word on the doctorate. If you look at Professor Moshe Kahana, you think he's a Chassidish Rebbe. He has a beer down to here with long payas, and he must be a Chassid. I'm told his father also was like that. They're very brilliant minds. What's interesting, Yitzhak, he tries to show you the interaction, because when you look at the Nodab Yehuda and the Chatam Sofer, they were the leading poskim of their generations. And the Nodab Yehuda, actually, when he died, that's when the Chatam Sofer starts growing up. Like, they literally stand, the Nodab Yehuda, the Chatam Sofer. And he tries to show the relationship that the Chatam Sofer, who's caught up in the Enlightenment and the reformers, right? And here he has to deal with the Nodab Yehuda's psak that permitted shaving on Chol HaMoed. Remember the Nodab Yehuda? If you have to go among the Goyim and it's a Jewish barber who doesn't have money for the Chag, with all his limitations, but ultimately that psak permitted shaving on Chol HaMoed. It reaches a point today where you all know a guy like Rakefet shaves on Chol HaMoed. The Rav shaved on Chol HaMoed. Yitz Rubin shaves on Chol HaMoed. Very, very fascinating work. A lot of theories, which is always involved in a doctorate. He could be right, he could be wrong. Some of the theories you can quibble with, but it's a very fascinating piece of work. My only complaint is about the Hebrew. It is the hardest Hebrew I ever had to read. Why? He has endless English words written in Hebrew, and you can blow your brains out. Professor Maoz Kahana, if you're listening, all future scholarship, when you have a work in Hebrew, any English you use, write it in English. Don't make us suffer and go through transliterations of easy English words. Okay, we're ready to roll in. We're in the heart of a very, very important and fascinating shiur. And we saw last week that the Korach leads the rebellion, but in order to have a rebellion, you need an ideology. And Korach's ideology can be summarized in the words of Chazal, Bayit Shekulot Chelet, Talit Shekulot Chelet, Bayit Molei Sfarim. Common sense will tell us we don't need a mezuzah if the house is filled with parchment, with texts. Common sense will tell us if your entire beged, all your clothes are blue to chelet, you don't need tzitzit. But Torah does not work with common sense. And this is the terrible problem that we all face, because we live in two worlds. And how can we guarantee that our thinking will be Torah thinking and not the common sense that's outside Torah? And we spoke a simple example, a very prominent example. Someone commented on it from Cleveland. He was familiar with what I quoted in class, the whole problem of inheritance. If someone will say, I want to be a good Jew and I want the inheritance to work exactly like the Torah, and someone did that in Geula Mea Shearim 100 years ago, the family is still fighting until today. Because according to Torah, the Bechor gets 2x, the sons get x, the daughters get nothing. When you marry off a daughter, you give her a dowry, but inheritance only with the son. Common sense today in the Western world is totally opposed to such thinking. So what the rabbis do, what the lawyers do, and in Israel, it's a very simple matter, but even in America, he tells me you can do it. You go to a lawyer, you file a document, and that document states it's not inheritance, but you're giving a gift 1 minute before you die. When you give a gift 1 minute before you die, you can give the gift as you wish. So you can give every child equal, whatever you decide. But you see there's the conflict here of common sense, and that's the Gemara I cited in Baba Batra, that a daughter cannot inherit a father. But a daughter of a son, a granddaughter, if she's the only one left, she inherits, because she's the daughter of a son. It's not common sense. If a daughter can't inherit, how can a granddaughter inherit? But halakha works within its own logic. And that's where the Rav spoke about, and that's critically important, that chiddush, innovation, is the heart of the halachic system. But the innovation has to be halachically correct. You cannot have innovation when it is outside the halachic system. And Avi Schwartz, Yeshiva College product, reads, so this is your second year of Smicha?
Third
year already, 18, I see, it's quicker than I think. And how do you relate to Moshe Schwartz and Alan Schwartz?
I have a different Uncle Alan Schwartz who is not in OZ.
A different Uncle Alan Schwartz, Beseda. So, not that family. Was your uncle my student, Alan Schwartz?
No, my mother was.
Sorry.
Your mother name?
Esther Zabeda from Panama.
Okay. That's bringing back good memories. Avi? Then the Rev made another point, and this takes us back to the question I asked you about in life. You walk into a class in Greek philosophy, do you make a bracha? Asher kedeshanu b'mitzvata b'tzivanu l'asok b'divrei Torah. Do we make a bracha? It's an interesting question. V'arevno, you can make an argument that everything in the world is holy, is sacred. You learn from mathematics, biology,
potential,
chemistry. But there's no question that the real Birchat HaTorah is made when you're learning Torah. All other knowledge doesn't compare to Torah. And you know very well, I often tell the story. In my time, there was a story, you can check it out. It happened in the early 60s. Probably online you can find the story. A Jewish man was professor of the Graduate School of Business Ethics at Harvard University. And it was front page news, the New York Times. He was arrested for unethical business behavior. Okay? Now I want to ask you a question. If you have a Rebbe who's teaching Torah, and lo and behold, that Rebbe is an ethical boor, can he teach Torah? Will you look up to him? You know what's going on in our Torah world today? So many scandals, but to teach Torah, Torah is life, Torah is continuity, Torah is the heart of the Jewish people. Torah is a meeting, a date, a rendezvous with the Ribbono Shel Olam. Avi, am I right? Isn't that the way the Rav explained it? What is Torah about? Avraham, it has to sanctify you. It has to change your whole being. And this is what Torah is about. And how can you learn Torah if you don't have that feeling, that humility, that Yirat Shemayim? And this is what Talmud Torah is about. And let me quote the Rav. Chazal have emphasized many times the importance of humility, that a proud person can never be a great scholar, because studying the Torah means meeting the Almighty. When a finite being meets the infinite, the maker of the world, this meeting must precipitate a mood of humility. Humility results in surrender. We surrender to the Almighty. The everyday logic, the logic of the businessman, the logic of the utilitarian individual, and we embrace the logic of Sinai. We surrender the very utilitarian, very superficial, everyday will, and we embrace another will, the will of Sinai. In order to join the ranks of the Chachmei Mesorah, we must not try to rationalize the Chukei Torah from without. One must not judge Chukim and Mishpatim in terms of a secular system of values. We must not yield to the passing charm of a modern political or ideological slogan. One must not try to give the halakhic norm to the transient values of modern neurotic society. And you see, this is the heart of the issues that face us. When the Rav, in the early 70s, and you have him on tape, it's now I saw online that's being passed around, when they started with the homosexual thrust, that homosexuality is normative, the Rav couldn't believe it. This is a total contradiction to human existence. And what happens is, you give in to what becomes Western transient values, and the whole Torah falls by the wayside. I've told you so many times about Dennis Prager. Dennis Prager, she should be a Shomer Shabbos. When he speaks with such depth and common sense. But I remember growing up, Ingrid Bergman was a famous actress. She committed adultery. The whole world was upset with her. They wouldn't let her do films at Hollywood. They wouldn't let her do a film again. Today, a person commits adultery, it's fine, it's normal, it's par for the course. Western society, what has happened? It is frightening. There's no God in the world. If you look in Europe on a Sunday morning, you go into any church, the churches are empty. In the United States, outside of the Bible Belt, where do you find people who believe, people who worship, people for whom God is a reality? It's a frightening world. And in this world, we have to survive as Jews. And this is what the Rebbe is saying. We always, when we deal with halakha, when we deal with the word that God gave us on Mount Sinai, we can't allow transient values to interfere with our thinking. And here's where the Rav told the famous story that I quote in my published volumes. The Rav related, and I'm giving it word by word. By the way, I have the talk that the Rav gave at the YURA. I'll give out copies later at the end of class. The Rav related, I quote, "I came from a rabbinical house. Believe me, Rav Chaim used to try his best to be mekel." And this is absolutely true. Rav Chaim was known as a tremendous mekel. I once joked around with the Rav. I hate to say it. I joked around. You know, it was 78. And I said to him, "Rebbe, the world says that Rav Chaim was a mekel in Treifus. But the Masham was also a great mekel." That's the Bijana Rav of Shalom Mordechai Shvadron. The Bijana Rav was a Galitzin, was a Golan Adir, 110 years ago. He was a great Mekil, great lenient Posek and Treifus. How come the Masham they put into Cherem And Reb Chaim got away with it. So Rebbe said to me, my Zayda was smarter. He never published this course. You follow? The Brisker Rav was part of the Brisker thinking, you don't publish, perfectionism. So he got away with it, but the Marsham published and he had Tzaris. So Reb Chaim was a great makio. But there are limits to Reb Chaim's kulis. When you reach the boundary line, all you can say is, I surrender to the will of the Almighty. And here the Rav told the story, Yitz and I have spoken about this many times, I'm quoting the Rav now. I had a case of a Gentile girl who became a Gioret Sitkanit. She did not join our nation because she wanted to marry someone, but she herself sought out Torah, converted. Later in graduate school, she met a Jewish boy who came from an alienated background and had no knowledge of Yahadut. She brought him close to Judaism, and they got engaged. He wanted to find out about his ancestry. So he visited the cemetery in which his grandfather was buried, his father's father. There he saw a strange symbol on the tombstone. 10 fingers, with the thumbs and forefingers performing a triangle. So he began to ask. He thought it was a mystical symbol. And his rabbi told him that his grandfather was a Kohen. What can we do? This is the halacha. A Kohen cannot marry a Geyrus. We surrender to the will of the Almighty. With sadness in my heart, I shared in the suffering of the poor woman who was instrumental in bringing him back to the fold, and then she lost him. She walked away. That's very powerful. Contrast this with David Hartman in his last book that they put out, and you should know how much I fought with Dovid. To me, it's sad, very sad, because I knew Davi. I write about him in Washington. I knew Davi 70 years ago, 65 years ago, and the Davi that he turned out to be. His new book begins. I think it's the last book, Alex. I may be wrong. Maybe it's the one before the last. But his book begins how when he was in the Rabbinate of Montreal, a Kohen came to him and said, Rabbi, you know I want to marry a Grusha. Will you perform the wedding? And Hartman said, not only will I perform the wedding, but tell every Kohen who wants to marry a Grusha or a Gioret that I will be happy to perform the wedding. Personal happiness is more important than the halacha. Well, if you go with that point of view, yes, in the Western world, as long as I don't break Asher's windows, I can do whatever I want. Avi Shachar. Do you understand Western values? Why do you go with a German name like Schwartz? Do the world a favor. Hebratize it.
I can answer that. My grandfather, Ellis Island, he was Gedalia Charney, and then he became Gedalia Schwartz.
He was Charney? I had a classmate, Charney. Conquered the world, died a billionaire, they tell me. Leon, any relationship?
Very possible, and if there is, please let me know.
He died. That's why I got rid of it. I set the example from Rothkopf became Rakefet. So Schwartz is very easy. It becomes Shachar. Avi, I love you. Don't change your name. Honor your grandfather's memory. Is he alive?
No.
Honor his memory. Keep the Schwartz. Steve, you didn't sign in. And please, everyone sign in with an email number, because, gentlemen, I have to be honest, my two of my closest friends are very ill, and it makes me stare eternity in the face. Irwin Shapiro had a heart attack, and Barry Liebman fell 4 times. He can't get, don't ask, he can't walk. I feel so bad, you have no idea. Barry Liebman, a very close friend of mine. Anyway, coming back here, you see, if you're going to go with personal happiness, and this is the Western world, No, if I love, for the sake of argument, a ham and cheese, why can't I have a ham and cheese sandwich? I love it. Personal happiness. What am I doing wrong? Who am I harming? You follow? Consenting adults. What's wrong with an open marriage? This is New York Times language. Open marriages. It's the end of any sanctity. The end of... It's unbelievable. But what's wrong? I'm not harming anyone. Not raping anyone. I'm not seducing anyone. It's a consensual relationship. My wife and I agreed we're going to have an open marriage. All right, we'll have children together, but each one of us can have our own affairs. When you go with that attitude, what is left of Torah? Ah, and then the Rav gets very down to the times of the 70s. The Women's Liberation Movement, I'm quoting the Rav again, word by word, challenge to halachas regards women being pasuliyedus is based upon common sense. They claim that feminine inferiority is indicated by this approach. Sign in with an email number as well. They claim, in other words, what's going on? The feminist revolution, by the way, was led entirely by Jewish women, or Jewish women who had the Jewish fathers. Say Gloria Steinem was not halachically Jewish, but she was half Jewish. Her father was Jewish. Ah, Bella Abzug, you have to know these women and what went on. And that a woman can't be a witness in a court, in a beitin. This is a slap in the face to women, women in feminine inferiority. And listen to the Rav. And here, it's amazing that he and Rav Menashe Klein said exactly the same thing. Actually, this is not true. If both were created in God's image, and he quoted the pasuk from Bereshit, Zachav and Nekeva bara otam, which is the only basis of ultimate worthiness, both men and women have infinite, equal, divine endowments. And the Rav said, how can you say inferiority? Sanhedrin, Perek Bet, Mishnah Bet, an open Mishnah. Hamelech lo me'idn oto. A king, a Jewish king, cannot give testimony. The fact that even King David or King Solomon would be pasul la'edot, invalid, suggests that the reasons for disqualification are other than one's relative worthiness. Rather, a woman's exclusion from the public political realm emerges out of the unique structure which has esoteric justification, which is not subject to common sense evaluation. You see what the Rav is saying? This has nothing to do with worthiness. Men and women are created equal. God will. A king cannot be a witness. A woman cannot be a witness. All right? It's a divine law. As the Rav often said, once we accept the divine law, remember, he said you knock twice, thrice, and then you try to understand it. But the understanding does not make it conditional to accepting the law. So a lot has been written on women, why they can't be witnesses. The truth of the matter is that in court today, in rabbinic courts in the state of Israel, I don't know about rabbinic courts out of the state of Israel, on all monetary matters, the testimony of women is accepted. Because when it comes to monetary matters, the court has the power to give money as they see fit. It's hefka based in hefka. And if women are going to help the judges understand the monetary problem, then you call upon the women to testify. This was instituted by the chief rabbi, I think, as early as 1945, actually.
Does that mean the Ades Haredes doesn't do that, though, or all the courts, you're saying?
I would imagine the Haredi courts do the same thing with that of a woman. I'm sure but the dinim of the Eid Haredi have a fabulous reputation for honesty and monetary a decision. So I imagine they hear women too if they have to. But the Chief Rabbinic Court certainly hear women. When it comes to kiyum dava, like witnesses on a get, or witnesses on a conversion, or witnesses at a marriage, only men. And there you can have many reasons. It could be that the most basic reason is kvod bat hamelech, is penima, that we try to keep the women out of the public thoroughfare. There's a certain sense of modesty in the women not constantly appearing in the public limelight. But that's only guesswork, and this is the divine law, and this is what we have to live with. But it's a very powerful example, because if King David or King Solomon cannot testify, then Rachamim's bride cannot be upset. You understand? It's no comment that she does not have divine image. And I heard this from the Rav many, many times, and it's a very powerful example. The Melech, the king, he cannot testify.
How about a woman running for
president? Let Clinton's Rabbi Gnack, let him paskin that shayla, Rabbi Menachem Gnack. That's her rabbi. It's very fascinating. But what the Rav says now is very, very powerful. Similarly, her ineligibility for the minyan, although Chazal tell us that Chana was our foremost teacher in the matter of tefillah, is not rational. Imagine, Chana herself is disqualified for a minyan. This is not common sense. Rather, it is a derivation from a unique conceptualized structure which operates on its own imperatives. And what the Rav is saying is very powerful. And by the way, Rav Menashe Klein said the same thing. It's very interesting, the parallels here. Look, the women complained they can't be counted for minyan. I have to tell you, my wife never complained. Someone wrote to me that I quoted my wife in a class. She thinks my wife is the Chveis, the Belza Rebbetzin. So I told them it's a joke, but my wife would say to me, you men pay a big price for the saying Shaloa Sani Isha. She said, you can't sleep late, you gotta look at your watch, you gotta get up for Kriyat Shema. You can't be, when you're not learning Torah, you have to ask yourself, do I have a right not to learn? You follow me, Avi? You pay a big price. But I don't want them to misunderstand my wife. My wife is still Lagriat Ramaz, because back in approximately 1953, 54, they wouldn't let her take Talmud. Women had to take home economics. So she's still angry at Ramaz that she had to take home economics and she couldn't take Talmud like the boys. And you know, the comment on Ramaz from her era, most of the women were not only from, they were Tzidkaniyot. Yitz Rubin's wife, Sikrona Levracha, was a Ramaz graduate of this period. They were Tzidkaniyot. And the boys threw away Torah as quickly as you can throw a yarmulke into the air. But the boys took Talmud, and the girls had to take home economics. So these women who complain, we can't be counted to minyan. How do we learn to pray? By the way, we're going to daven Maariv tonight. So we must keep a minyan here. It's a chesed to the Rebbe who has a cold, and to other old-timers here that we don't have to go out again tonight. We're going to daven Maariv. Yeah.
You have a wedding.
So, Asher, you'll count to us to go to the wedding. I know about the wedding. And you call in the reserves? Okay. Say that. We'll worry about it at 6:35. Okay? Gesundheit, go to the wedding with Samei Chatan Vakala. But the women complain. Well, and you have to say Kriyat Shema or afterwards. It'll be after Shkia, but it won't be Zman Kriyat Shema yet. But the women complain they can't be counted to minyan. We're going to down for Shema Yisrael, everything. And then suddenly we reach Shmon Esrei, and there's absolute silence. Who taught us to pray that way? The Torah says nothing about it. The Gemara, how did we learn it? Where did the Gemara learn it from? Chana, when Eli HaKohen HaGadol saw her davening. Her lips were moving and there was no sound. And from time immemorial, millions upon millions of Jews prayed because Chana taught us how to pray. So you see, it's nothing to do with Western thinking. Men are men, women are women, and we have to keep Torah values. We can't allow Western values to be our gauge. Then the Rav went one step further, and here it caused a tremendous outcry, which continues until today. And the Rav said, look, there's a basic difference between man and woman. Not only the halachot, but the chazakot, which Chazal introduced, are indestructible. A chazaka, it's a halachic way of thinking. You may not tamper not only with the halachot, but not even with the chazakot, for the chazakot of Chazal rests not upon transient psychological behavioral patterns, but on permanent ontological principles rooted in the very depths of the metaphysical human personality, which is as changeless as the heavens above. Now that English is the Rav's, it's fancy English. What does the word ontological mean? Avi, did you ever hear that word before?
I've heard it. Yes.
The Rav taught it to me. Believe me, I didn't know what the word meant until I sat before the Rav. Ontological, it's part of creation. And you see what the Rav is relating here to is the heart of the controversy with Rabbi Rachman and all that comes with it. Kedushin Daf Zayin Amud Aleph 7a, Tav Lemeitiv Tandu. Better to live two together than alone. And wow, what does this mean? What does this mean? Tavlamaitiv tandu. Yomo, move to the side so you don't block. Yes, good. Tavlamaitiv tandu meilamaitiv almala. Gentlemen, we speak of the happy bachelor. There are a few bachelors sitting in this room. One, I can't bother because he's older than I am. The other one, I hit over the head every day and I get absolutely nowhere. You guys are happy, bachelors. A woman who doesn't marry suffers. It's amazing. Why should she suffer? Be happy. You're alone. Don't have to put up with a man. She suffers. You never speak of a happy spinster. The very word spinster has a sad connotation. I hate to tell you what word they use in Hebrew. Chamutzah. A woman who doesn't marry, they use the word, yeah, chamutza, a little sour. This has absolutely nothing to do with the social and political status of the woman in antiquity. This chazakah is not based upon sociological factors. It is a pasuk in the Torah, Bereshit Perikimul Pasuk Tet Zayin, Velishech Teshukateich, Vohu Himshal Bach, and thy desire shall be to thy husband. It's very fascinating. The Lubavitcher Rebbe understood this. Remember what we quoted in class, and it was certified by the Rebbe's personal doctor, the Rebbe, when he had his heart attack in the late 70s, and the doctor told him he could now start to normalize his lifestyle, he was very happy because it meant he could have his midday tea with his wife. And he said that midday tea with his wife was as important to him as putting on tefillin in the morning. And that is a very deep comment. And you find with a woman, and I think I've had a little experience, both on my personal level, being married, Kanayin Hara, for many years, and from all that I've seen in life. Remember, I've lived many, many lives. You have no idea what I have seen, what life is all about. This is why in my old age I've given up on the Musa movement and I've become a Hasid. That if any movement can affect the masses, it's the Hasidic movement. The Musa movement can affect a few hundred people. You have to be very big to be a Musanik. But Hasidus has a much broader built-in appeal. But a woman needs attention. She has to know that you think of her. Books have come out that a man, I'm quoting from one of the modern books on Venus and Mars, a man doesn't want to be pushed around. A woman doesn't want to be pushed away. It's a very interesting distinction. A woman, husband cares, knows she's alive. A cup of tea. Wow, that's a deep understanding of the Rebbe, which he doesn't need my approval. The Rebbe was the Rebbe. We are little worms compared to the Rebbe. But the Rav, you understand? One person had his ear, his Rebbetzin, Rebbetzin Tanya, Dr. Tanya Soloveitchik. You look at some of the greatest Rabbanim and you see their wives and the relationship between them. Reb Moshe and his Rebbetzin, Reb Yaakov. They tell a story about Reb Yaakov. I heard this from eyewitnesses. His first wife died quite young. And he remarried. And endless women wanted to remarry him. And they asked him, why did you finally choose the woman he chose? I believe she was from Toronto. And Reb Yaakov gave an unbelievable answer that his students in Torah Vadas, you know, these kids dormed. They came from all over. So they wore the same shirt Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. Yeah, by Thursday already, you could tell they were going to go home and they'll have the shirt washed and ironed. This lady's son always came to class with a fresh shirt. His mother, before he left Toronto to come to the yeshiva, gave him 5-6 different shirts that every day you should look like a mensch. That's who he remarried. Then they tell the story, was at a wedding. And a Talmud came over to him and said, Rebbe, when does the Rosh Yeshiva want to leave? This Talmud was driving him back and forth. He said, don't ask me. Ask the Rebbetzin. I signed the ketuvah. When you give a ketuvah to a woman, it means you're mitchayev to follow her wishes. When she wants to leave, that's when I will leave. And the student walked away like he was, couldn't believe the answer, but has opened his eyes to the relationship. But you see that this concept, it's not a Western concept. It's ontological. It's part of creation. It is a metaphysical curse rooted in the feminine personality. She suffers incomparably more than the male while in solitude. Solitude to a male is not as horrifying an experience as solitude to a woman. And this will never change. Kimei Shamayim al Haaretz. It is not a psychological fact. It is existential and existential fact. However I pronounce it, you got the word. It is not due to the inferior status of the woman, but it is due to the basic distinction between the male and female personalities. An old spinster's life is much more miserable and tragic than the life of an old bachelor. This was true in antiquity. It is still true today. It will be true 1,000 years from now. To say that Tav the Maitav was due to the inferior political or social status of women at that time is simply misinterpreting the Chazaka. No legislation can alleviate the pain of a single woman. No legislation can change this role. She was burthened with it by the Almighty after eating from the tree of knowledge. Now, this was a very powerful statement. And this was part of the heart of the controversy between Mori Rebbe and Rabbi Rachman. And again, I want to stress that Rabbi Rachman's intentions were for the good of the women. In other words, it's not that Rabbi Rachman is a reformer, but he was caught up in this tremendous problem that haunts us until today, men who refuse to give a get. In Israel, we're in better circumstances than America because the rabbinic courts have power. And you got to be a pretty sick individual to allow yourself to go to jail or wind up in solitary confinement because you won't give a get. In America, the rabbinic courts do not have this power, and it's a tragic situation. I agree. I agree wholeheartedly. I would not perform a wedding if there wasn't a prenuptial agreement. A prenuptial agreement at least gives the woman a good chance that there will not be difficulties if the marriage breaks up. But here I just want to sidetrack for the sake of intellectual honesty. Is the Rav correct about you cannot question a chazaka? Tav lemeitiv du me lemeitiv armala? Fine. But there are the chazakat in chazal. I'll give you another example. Chazaka. Ein adam ose bilato bilat znut. Chazaka, a man does not treat his sex as something profane. If a man lives with a woman, it's for the sake of marriage. Do you understand the implications of what I just said? Yomo comes from the Ukraine. My new book was printed in the Ukraine. More copies are coming into Israel within 2 to 3 days, they told me.
Why Ukraine?
Is
it cheaper?
Yeah, well, it's Shvetami people in the Ukraine have a printing business. Where does Schottenstein, where do they print the Talmud?
Also,
China. All the Schottensteins. Says published in the United States, but the actual printing is done in China. So, you come from the Ukraine. Hundreds of thousands of Jews came from the Soviet Union. More than 1.5 million Jews have come into Israel in modern times from the Soviet Union. Just do me a favor, close the door. Thank you. Okay. Let's talk about the Soviet Union. Soviet Union's like America. Sex became cheap, an everyday commodity. So a boy and a girl in America want to have relations. What's the big deal? Their parents have big homes. Do what they want, go to a motel, do what they want. In Russia, you couldn't do what you want. Four families are sharing one apartment. People don't believe it, but this was the Russia I saw when Malka and I worked for the Mossad. I'm telling you what I saw, not what anyone told me. Now they write books, they tell the stories about it. So, in order to have relations, you have to get married. So they would go to the justice on a Sunday, dressed up in Sunday clothes with all their medals that they've won at work, their parents with medals, get married. Multiply this by hundreds of thousands of examples. 20-year-old boys marrying 19-year-old girls. A few years later, they got divorced. They got married again. They got divorced again. Then they came to Israel, became Balei Tshuva. And suddenly a kid from the third marriage is learning in Gris Kolel. No, his mother was married twice before. Each marriage was to a Jewish man. She didn't get a get from husband one, she didn't get a get from husband two. Husband three already, she got married, Chuvah V'Kedushin. The other marriages, they live together. The minute they live together, you gain a woman through sexual relations. Simon, you recognize this problem? If you say the chazaka ein adam ase bilat snut is correct, we have hundreds of thousands of mamzerim marching around. So here, without going into great detail, I lectured on it for 2 years in Gris Kollel. Tremendous machleiket, Reb Moshe Feinstein versus Reb Yosef Leo Henkin. Tremendous machleiket. But we paskin like Reb Moshe Feinstein, that nowadays, when sex is treated as a commodity that you buy in a store, there's nothing to which you can buy a candy bar. So you have sexual relations. Big deal. You buy a Coca-Cola. Big deal. Today, sex does not create a Jewish marriage. This chazaka no longer applies because man's mentality has changed. Yitzhak, do you see the question here? So this is tremendous machlokah. You have no idea how much literature has been written. I'm not raising an issue which I'm the first one to raise.
I don't see that as a kasha on...
So relax. So, I know the Rav is my Rebbe. I know Rabbi Rachman very well too. I'm very enamored of Rabbi Rachman. He was one of the finest individuals as a human being that you'll ever meet. A sweetheart of a human being. So I went to Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein and I said to Aaron, how do you reconcile this? Here the Rav says it can never change. And here's a chazaka, which we see Reb Moshe paskins la halacha. The Rav didn't paskin that way, but that's not important now. The Rav held more like Reb Yosef Elio Henkin. But Reb Moshe, not only Reb Moshe, many other poskim. You see that the chazaka does vary. So Rav Aaron answered me, he spoke to the Rav about this. And what the Rav should have added here with one sentence, that this chazaka of tav lemeitiv du lemeitiv al mala is part of creation. It's not a chazaka based on life realities. It's a ontological chazaka, coming back to that fancy word. And this totally solves the problem. And I can tell you, my wife's family is in America for 40-50 years already. Her great-grandparents are buried in America. We were showing pictures last night to grandchildren, you know, who you're named after, and the names in the family. Note when you come to America 150 years ago that you have some Frum descendants is a miracle. In my wife's family, there are a lot of Frum descendants. Almost all of them live in Israel, although there's some living in America as well. Fine. But there are plenty of descendants who totally threw it away. My wife's father's family, my father-in-law, Zichron Levracha, had two sisters who basically never married. Totally Americanized. One of them actually changed the name that her parents gave her. You understand? Wanted a different name. Totally nothing to do with Judaism. When their parents died, they didn't sit shiva. My father-in-law was furious. They didn't sit shiva. Old-fashioned, antiquated custom. And these two women, who were attractive and very successful and had careers and money, basically never married. One finally married way on in years, a second marriage for a man who had been widowed. The other one never married. And, you know, when you grow older and they move to Florida, when senior citizens, residences, and we used to visit them. Kibbutz Avi'im, it's an aunt and aunts, it's a close relationship. You honor the earlier generation. And we got to talk with them. And Malka's aunt, who was a spinster, said, I quote, the greatest mistake of my life was not marrying. And we asked both of them how they feel about tav lemeitiv du lemeitiv al mala, vis-a-vis what we're speaking about. Is it something to deal with civilization, or it's just born into us. It's the way God made the world. And both of them said, 100%, it is the way the Ribbono Shel Olam made the world. So you see, this too becomes very important. We have to come from Torah, not from a world that's outside of Torah. And this was a big conflict. The Rav was very adamant. He wouldn't accept Rabbi Rachman's concept of Hafkat Kedushin. And again, there'll be a lot of material in the next volume of Rakaf and Aaron dealing with this very problem. But halachically, I'll just say it very quickly, whenever there was retroactive annulment of marriage in Chazal, there are four different cases where there was, in each case, there was a get, but a get that had a halachic problem. Chazal, through the concept of Hafkat Kedushin, certified the get. But where there's no get, it doesn't get off the floor. Let alone the whole question of which Beit Din can do Hafkat Kedushin. It's a very painful problem. If we could solve it so easily, like Rabbi Rachman says, we would have never had a problem with the classic Aguna. Then anyone who disappeared, let Beit Din be mafki the Kedushin retroactively. But you see, Chazal didn't solve it that way. And hundreds of thousands of pages of responsa literature were written. And Rakefet can put out a book of 370 pages. And two-thirds of the book is dedicated to the classic Aguna. So you see, they couldn't take this road. And you have to separate Torah thinking from the Western concepts. It's hard. It's a challenge. It's not easy. We all live within two worlds. And this goes way beyond the board of halakhic matters. Your values. Tell me, how do you feel about a big Rosh Yeshiva or a big Hasidic Rebbe? And whenever a Chassid comes to see him or a Talmud comes back, he brings the Rebbe a bottle of whiskey. That's the Rebbe's. Or a Rebbe who loves cigars. And the Talmud goes to Cuba and he brings back cigars. No, you have to have values. It's not, you can't let yourself be overrun by the Western world. And this is the Rav, but we'll go one step further. Hold on. Yes, Avi.
What was the Rav's feelings on the Langer case?
What was the case?
The Langer case. Someone just asked me how come I spend so much time in my book on the Langer case. The Rav, it's something I happen to know. I can't tell the whole story publicly. It goes back to the Rav and Rabbi Gorin and their relationship and how it began in 1935. I've told it off the cuff outside of class many times. Halacha l'maisa, I heard from Manny Holzer. He absolutely agreed with Rav Gorin's ruling, 100%. Rav Gorin gave four reasons for the Langer Heter. The Rav agreed with three out of the four. I'm happy to tell you, Baruch Shekimanti Ladat Gedolim, yours truly also felt three out of the four. The fourth one with the who is a Jew and the Chazakah, there I felt Rav Gorin was off base, but the others were strong enough, Lahatil Halakha, turning into a Sveik Sveika in the full sense of the word. And Rav Gorin deserved a lot of credit because he went to the archives of Tel Aviv municipality and they found that the father was referred to by neutral observers, Mesichim Lefi Tumam, in the 1930s as the Polish Catholic, quote, end quote. But that was a sad case that totally divided the religious community all over the world. For your edification, Avi, the greatest Gaon Tzaddik alive at the time that no one could bribe and had no activity in the world of politics. He was blind at the time as well. Rabbi Yosef Eliyahu Henkin, you have him on tape where he says he can't understand why the world doesn't understand Rav Gorin's psak. If you look into Rav Moshe's Zigrot Moshe that came out, the volume that came out shortly thereafter, you'll find Heterim from Mamzerim no different than what Rav Gorin was able to hatil halacha with the Langer case. I can tell you off the cuff that a guy named Baron Rekefet deserves credit. People at that machloket, people who knew how to learn, were totally turned off, couldn't understand the right-wing opposition. Some of them were very, very angry. And because of my shayurim, I was able to calm them down and show them, all right, it's a machloikis, but Rav Gorin has two good solid feet on which to stand. I also knew some of the Dayanim who sided with Rav Gorin personally, and I spoke with them at great length, particularly his nephew, Reb Eliezer Shapiro, Zeicher Tzadik Levracha, who was an Afbeitin in Yerushalayim and was a gon adir in its own right. But that's to answer your question, and that's the Rav and Rabbi Gorin and the Lange case. Okay, do you know what I'm talking about, the Lange case? Who doesn't know? Raise your hands if you don't know. So, the Lange case, it was in the early 70s, was a brother and sister in the Israeli army who wanted to get married, and the rabbin had told them, we can't marry you because you may be mamzerim. Why may they be mamzerim? Because she ran off with a man in Poland who was a guy and had a marriage with him. They later come to Israel, they get divorced, and she marries a Jew, Lange, and a rabbi, Talmud Chacham, performed the second marriage. And children are born from the second marriage, but she never had a get from the first marriage. Now, the question is, did she need a get?
So he
underwent the conversion that her father did. Her father, a private conversion. And the question was that conversion valid? And Rav Gorin proves that the conversion was not valid. And among all the proofs was a fabulous discovery how they became a welfare case. And the Jews who worked for the municipality of Tel Aviv, dealing with welfare cases, constantly described him as the Polish guy. That's part of it. There's much more to it. Even if he converted, there was proof that he went to cemeteries, Goyish funerals, and crossed himself like a Catholic does when they carried the body by. There was also proof he occasionally went to church. There was also proof he ate chazal with his friends in Haifa, I think it was, when they lived in Haifa. So there was a lot there. You can convert it, but if you don't observe and go from the conversion to eating chazal, the whole conversion may very well be worthless.
Why was it so controversial?
Don't get me involved. This is why people wanted to leave Yiddishkeit, and I held them back. I don't want to talk more because it's people listening.
You should answer his question so that he can understand.
Let me give myself a title. You came to Rav Rekefet's class last Monday. Rav Rekefet, I believe, last Monday said something that you have to kiss the man for saying it. Remember, he told you the story in the mid-50s, 53, 54. Something big was happening in Crown Heights. So a group of MTA guys contacted them. We want to come to spend the Shabbos in Crown Heights. So Chabad arranged for us to come and spend the Shabbos. And what happened? There was a host and hostess, a family where I slept, where I ate, where they took me to mikvah on Shabbos, etc., etc. I write about it in Washington. And I asked the beautiful question. You dress in black, you look black, you have beards. Where are you any different than Agudat Yisrael? And the answer he gave changed my life. He said, if Mizrahi would build 50 mikvot, Agudah would passel them. If Agudah would build 50 mikvot, Mizrahi would passel them. Chabad would send Yashar Koach to each one for building 50 mikvot. That answers your question, I trust. Believe me, when I see some of our religious Haredi politicians, tell me, Derry, you would trust Derry? You would trust Gaffney? These men have made statements? In my humble opinion, they don't start to understand what Torah Hashem Tamima is about. They are as distant from Torah as I am from giving a shir to Meir Tzidkon today. Maybe 40 years ago I did give some shir that Meir Tzidkon listened to, but today I can't. Let me go further. Did I answer him, Yitzchak?
Well, you could have been a little stronger.
Yitzchak.
He wants you to
relax. Halavai, we could make the Datiyim more Haredi and the Haredim more Datiyim. It would be a great world. But if they build mikvot, let's give a Yashikayach. Korach, listen to what the Rav says. We are opposed to Shinoyim. We're against innovation, but not the Chiddush, which is certainly the very essence of Halacha. Chiddushim are within the system and not from outside. You cannot psychologize halacha, historiarize halacha, or rationalize halacha. These are foreign, extraneous concepts. The human being is invited to be creative, inventive, and to engage in an inspiring research from within and not from without. And by the way, I'll give you another example here, which the Rav always quoted. When it comes to building a sukkah, you all know the halacha, the very makil. What's a sukkah made in Torah? Three walls, right or wrong. And the third wall doesn't even have to be complete, right or wrong. Can be very small. No? So you remember all the theories. Rav Heschel Shechter quotes the Rav on this. Many people had theories that wood was scarce in the state of Israel, in the land of Israel. So since wood was scarce, that's why Chazal were makil so. But the Rav said it's just the opposite. This is what you build the sukkah with. Chazal were able to apply it and show you that you do not need that much wood to build the sukkah. But it's not that the Chazal, the tradition, comes about because of the reality. It's that the tradition enables you to deal with the reality.
In some cases, when a wall is an elephant, it can be a wall.
You're talking about a balchai, if you tie it down. There are many, many kulot, many, many kulot. But you all know that building a sukkah is very, very simple. And even ten tefachim, you understand, you take a look at the wall. What, this is a wall? Ten tefachim? That's a wall. Baruch atah melech haolam shekol yevid baro. I had a friend, 69 or 70, he tried Aliyah. Subsequently, he went to America. He came back now. He lives here. David Olivestone. You may recognize the name. He worked for the OU. So he had a car where you could take a, what do they call it, where you can open up the top. There's a little air vent. So, a sunroof. He opened it up and he put schach on. And it was on the front page of the Mariv Yediot, the sukkah on wheels. But he claimed it was a kosher sukkah, that he had enough room, he could sit under it. It was, his body fit in. That's all you need. The walls of the car, it was an amazing sukkah. And let me just go one drop further with the Rav. Korach lacked patience to master the unique halachic concept. He was not a lamdan. Korach wanted to do for halacha what Aristotle did to physics. So too, all the pseudo-halachists of our own day who prescribe all forms of amendments to the halachic system, they wish to turn it into a mundane marketplace experience. Of course, Moshe won. The unique halachic system will continue forever. Moshe Emmet, V'torato Emmet. My dear students, I've now arrived. What I've said until now is axiomatic. You can't quibble with it, you can't argue with it. We live in two worlds, we have to succeed in two worlds. We have to keep the two worlds separate. We from Yeshiva University, particularly those who yet saw the Rav, we have a special responsibility in leading the Jewish people because the Rav was a prime example of someone who could live in two worlds and succeed in both and keep them both within their natural, very important boundaries.
The Yiddish verb would be segut and selait.
Herbie says segut and selait. All right, I'll accept that. That's a Yiddish expression. Someone who can be loyal to God and be a decent human being. Now, nature abhors a vacuum. Only a minority of Jews have succeeded in living in two worlds successfully. From the time Mendelssohn left the ghetto, we all know what percentage broke away. It's millions upon millions of Jews. Whenever you read obituaries today in the New York Times of famous people, many times you'll see Jews married to Gentiles. Many times it's their second marriage when they throw away their Jewish wife, like Henry Kissinger, and marry a Gentile. The assimilation is rampant. This going out of the ghetto gave birth to the Reform Movement. The Reform Movement gave birth to the Conservative Movement. The Conservative Movement gave birth to the Reconstructionist Movement. And you all know where we stand today. As long as the faculty at JTS was basically an Orthodox faculty, the seminary remained to a certain degree within the tent of halacha and Jewish law. With the demise of Professor Shaul Lieberman, the students felt free to break every rule, and it was a gradual process. Women rabbis, women cantors, women minyanim. By the early 2000s, there was basically no difference between conservative and reform movement. The New York Times had an article where they asked a conservative student at the seminary, how can you accept homosexuality if it's an open sentence in the Bible against homosexuality? And the student answered, I quote, is this the first sentence in the Bible we rejected? If we rejected other sentences, we certainly can reject this sentence. On the Orthodox scene, a breakaway began. It began gradually. Feminism, the way we treat women. I remember hearing a shiur of my classmate in the 70s recorded. I was living in Israel already for many years, Rabbi Saul Berman. And I couldn't believe my ears. Literally, accusations against the Torah people, women, and don't let them study, don't let them learn, don't let them express themselves. And a new movement, slowly but surely, caught on. No one could believe that the same movement, later you come up with homosexuality, which is the most frightening challenge to Torah. It defies imagination. And yet, people who have smicha from YU made a shechiyonu, as I told you, when the Supreme Court recognized sanctified same-sex marriages. Then you come up the old Bible criticism, which was so dishonored, I would say, so confronted by modern discovery, by archaeological finds, the old Bible criticism that Nechama Leibowitz and Yeshaya Leibowitz, and this is one of the few issues on which they both agreed, they claimed it was anti-Semitism, Wellhausen. Suddenly, you have the question being raised in Orthodox circles, people who studied in Satmar yet, and rebelling against Satmar, coming into this new way of thinking and raising the question of biblical criticism, we have to reevaluate, etc. People saying that the Yetziat Mitzrayim was a myth. I mean, it's earth-shaking what you're hearing. And then the ordination of rabbis, and it goes on and on and on. So I want to state, in my humble opinion, and I've been involved and I've been on top of the scene, and some of the people playing out these roles are my own students. Some are students of Baron Lichtenstein, some are students of the Rav, the older generation. I believe the breach is here and it cannot be alleviated. I for one, will not use the word open orthodox. I will only use the word neoconservative. There are reasons why they stick to the word neo-orthodox. In a way, it's a credit to the Rav that the Rav fought such a bitter, caustic, classic battle for mechitza that with all their innovations in the synagogue, they still have a mechitza. The women daven for the amid, the women layin, the women have aliyot, but there is a mechitza there. Now, when I came to America this past summer, people were very excited. Students, 12, 15 students of Chovevei Torah issued a proclamation how upset they are with the innovative prayer groups like Shira Chadasha, like what's going on at Jerisha, and they feel very uncomfortable with women davening, women being rabbis, etc., etc. So people said to me, my own Talmidim said to me, Rebbe, take a look, this is a good sign. So I want to tell you, yes, it's a good sign, but it doesn't change my conclusion. Unfortunately, I have a doctorate in modern Jewish history. Unfortunately, I have done my research and I devoted my life to learning and research. I never made a living in my life. I thank the Almighty I had enough seichel to turn down many offers. I told people when recently, the other day, about an offer I got with the new presidency of YU, an offer that was made to me in 74, and I turned it down on the spot. But because I devoted my life to research with living, I know a little bit about what went on. Gentlemen, come back in my time machine. Usher, please call and see we have two or three more people here. So we definitely have a minion, okay? Because people have to go to a wedding. We have a minion, I know that, but two people have to go to a wedding. Am I right? Two people sitting here. If we daven at 7:45, you'll have time to make the wedding. We'll be finished by 7:53.
6:45.
What?
6:45.
6:45. Yeah.
So someone told us someone was driving. That's why I stayed much later.
Oh yeah, I understand. But can you daven Marav? If you're here, we don't need. We have 10 people. All right. Let's finish and let's stop.
Who else is leaving?
The Yomar has to go to the wedding too. So.
Is he here?
Weddings
don't start on time.
We know that. Let me come back here.
Without those two.
If we have a menu without them, it's fine. But I don't want them to feel bad. We're lacking. We're lacking one without them. We're lacking one. Okay. If we'd be conservative, we'd have a menu. There's a lady sitting here, but we're not conservative.
We'll find out from another door.
Okay. You'll find out. But what I'm about to say is very important. Oh, he'll be back. Okay, Schwartz will be back. Okay, we'll bring in one for security. Okay, listen very carefully. I want you to come into my office. In my office, I have a chair. I buzz it on, and you type into the computer, 1916, Jewish Theological Seminary. Yitz, we're in JTS, 122nd Street and Broadway, 1916. You're going to meet some of the frumest people you ever met in your life, right there. Herbert S. Goldstein.
1914.
That era. Yeah. Max Straub. These people were totally frum. But they were modern. They had this dream, we can take orthodoxy and make it attractive in the Western world. This is a process. I'm not here to tell you that everyone in Chovevei Torah believes in biblical criticism, doesn't believe there was a
Yitzhak Mitzrayim.
Yes. I'll give you. So, but I'm only saying, I believe the process is at work. It cannot be stopped. It's like a snowball rolling down the mountain. Now, what I want to make available to the Kollel, This volume just came out. I don't know whether it's reached Israel. It's a fabulous volume, Why Open Orthodoxy is Not Orthodox. And it cites, very well done, everything with sources, everything that we have spoken about. The one who put it together is David Rosenthal. I gather he's a graduate of Ne'er Yisrael and he's a graduate of John Hopkins. Yeah, I am correct. He's from Manalapan, New Jersey, wherever that is. Although I wouldn't. Where is that?
Next door to Lakewood.
Next door to Lakewood, okay.
It's in New Jersey.
He's a Musmach of Ne'er Yisrael. This volume, it is very, very good to read. It gives you all the sources. Yitz, you want it first?
Okay.
You take it first, and when you bring it back, who gets it next? Make a chain of command. Okay, Mike, then give it to Michael again to the panel. Now, this is what Yitz asked me about. Tradition. This is the latest tradition. Give Yitz one. Alex, you take one and make it available. This entire tradition is devoted to the question of women. What do we do with women? And I have to tell you, all these articles agree with Aaron Rakefet. It's exactly my talking. Women are learning. Women are studying.
No, it's okay.
You take it first.
Women are knowledgeable. Women are knowledgeable. Give to Michael. Michael, you take it. You take it. Give it to Michael. Give it to Michael. Michael, please take it. Women are knowledgeable. And they struggle. What title can we give women? One of the articles mentions Chabad, just like I do, how Chabad totally solved the problem. I throw out for advice RA and SA. Rabbinic advisor, spiritual advisor. If anyone's listening.
Listen to my lecture where I address this among other topics later. We'll talk about
it. If anyone's listening, R.A. essay in shul.
Is that the same thing in Benny Lau's?
I don't know. Lau is using the title Rabbah. And finally, I want to tell you, David Berger, who's a top individual, so he's been critical of what's happened at the Chovevei Torah. So when these Chovevei Torah students spoke out, if you understand some of the extreme statements in Chovevei Torah, so he's made certain comments. So he has an article where he's a little bit happy that people in Chovevei Torah are trying to disown the extreme element. I'm not certain we can be happy. I'm not certain the process is beyond us. Finally, I want to end off on a very, very sad note. This article appeared in Makor Rishon. It's an interview with someone who is my student twice over, both in BMT and in Gurus. He has a handwritten smicha from Rabban Lichtenstein. He taught in Gurus for, I believe, over 15 years. Taught Rabbi Bednash, replaced him. And he just opened up a yeshiva for boys and girls together, men and women. He just gave smicha to two women. And his thinking is totally part of the Chovevei Torah process.
What is his name?
You don't recognize his face. It's Hefter. Herzl Hefter. Harry Hefter. Herzl Hefter.
What's older
than you? Harav Hefter. He taught right here in this kollel. And he's a wonderful teacher, a wonderful human being. So they ask him, would Rabbi Soloveitchik, would the Baruch Lichtenstein agree with what you're doing? And without batting an eyelash, he says, absolutely not. They would totally disagree with what I'm doing. But could you imagine? Totally disagree, and it doesn't bother him. He who's that?
A person can differ with a rabbi, but this is an issue that's beyond that.
Yeah, it's way beyond that, but the whole attitude. And I contrast this There was a rabbi in my time in yeshiva, a young man, a few years ahead of me, Rabbi David Stavsky. Does anyone remember, Steve, do you remember him? It's Gatzmich a few years before us. Azah Eidela person. I taught all his children. I taught his niece, his nephews, Stavsky. His mother married Rabbi Abraham Atkin. All right, it's a generation gone by. He went to Columbus, Ohio as a young man, and that was the only shtelah he ever took and had. His grandson is there today. His grandson studied in the Kollel. His grandson succeeded the grandfather. Now, towards the end of his life, he was on his deathbed. And he asked this balabas in the shul, put together the pictures I have where I stand with various rabbanim and make a collage and hang it up. I should be able to look at these pictures. Unfortunately, the person did not finish the collage before Rabbi Stavsky died. But if you want to look at the pictures, you see the difference between Rabbi Hefter and this, that's Rabbi Stavsky with the Rav. You see? That's Rabbi Stavsky with Rav David Lipschitz. Could you imagine this? This is what his pride was. That's Rabbi Stavsky with Rav Mordechai Gifter of Tells on the outside. The tall individual. That's Rabbi Gifter. That's Rabbi Stavsky with a Hasidic Rebbe. I don't know who that is. Is that the Kloisenberger? Does anyone know? Anyone recognize who that is? That's Rabbi Stavsky. No, tell me who this is. Rabbi Moshe Feinstein. David Stavsky. That's who we're talking about. That's the famous picture that I published in my book of the Rav and the Rebbe at the Fabrengen in 1980.
Can I have a copy of that?
I'll make a copy. Just give me a second. This is Rabbi Stavsky with Rav Shmuel Belkin. This is Rabbi Stavsky with... Who recognizes? Rav Lazer Silva. This is Rabbi Stavsky with Rabbi Yitzchak Kaduri. This is Rabbi Stavsky with Rabbi Chaim Pinchas Scheinberg. This is the ultimate picture, Rabbi Stavsky with, no, who is this? Rabbi Yeruchim Gorelick. That, you recognize Rabbi Yeruchim? Yes, there he is, Rabbi Yeruchim Gorelick in his old age, when we knew him he had a much blacker beard. No, but that's middle age, that's, there's Rabbi Yeruchim, there he is staring at you. I don't recognize this picture. Looks like a Litvisher Rosh Yeshiva. I don't think it's the Plinovitcher Rav. Anyone recognize? If you recognize, please let me know. So to summarize, this is what Yiddishkeit is all about. And frankly, I hope I'm wrong, but I think as every day goes by, we can dialogue a lot less with Chovevei Torah, because their emphasis is in the Western world. And we're coming from the Torah world.
Wait, what's that?
Halavai.
If they have fellows who are ready to go against the trend, this means they should be encouraged, not shunted aside.
What are you talking about against the trend? What trend are you talking about?
The trend that these are men who are speaking for...
We need someone.
Come in.
We got, okay, we're ready to daven in a minute. I encourage them, but I don't want to get false hopes up. If anyone wants a copy of the Rav's talk, here it is. And so we spent today on the Rav and Rav Menashe Klein, contemporary issues, Chovevei Torah.
Where is the Rav's talk?
I wouldn't, next week, Be'ezrat Hashem, I'm picking up with a case study of when you compromise, what happens, introducing you to a book that no one knows exists, and I wouldn't miss next week for all the money in Fort Knox. We're dealing with Reb Shlomo LeKalbach. Tomorrow, I wouldn't miss for all the rice in China. I'm going to say something very insightful on how Chabad can conquer the world today. And let me tell you, even my students of years ago who were contemporaries with the next president of YU will agree with what I have to say tomorrow.
Who's the next president of YU?
Next president of YU is our student from this very kollel, Rabbi Dr. Ari Berman. And we're going to daven Maariv, but everyone please say Kriyat Shema over 25 minutes from now. Until we meet again, health and happiness. Das v'danya.